B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome to the program, Felger and Maserati on a Friday, meaning agenda-free Friday. They are driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, where car buying is always agenda-free. Choose from new Acuras, Hondas, Toyotas, Volvos, and over 500 pre-owned vehicles. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com. Anything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to is on the table. You set the agenda. Get it? We have released the hounds at 617-779-0985. Load up the lines. We'll go to you as soon as you are locked and loaded and ready to go. In the meantime, we fill. Or I mean to say we start by saying fill. That sort of has a negative connotation.
Like feels we're like just we're filling. Really half-assing it.
Yeah, we're not. Cream. These, we work on opening takes that come out firing guns blazing. So we're going to start with opening takes while you're loading up the lines. Maz, you want to go first?
No, I want Murray to go first.
All right. I think we're getting a game in Buffalo on Sunday. And there's even a little bit of Big Jim worry in me that's just a wee bit nervous. About an upset for legitimate reasons. I think the Bills' defense matches up well with the Patriots' offense. Sean McDermott overall has done a really good job of containing Patriot offenses over the years, even when he was the D coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. And specifically, he's frustrated Tom Brady. Again, there's legitimate numbers to back it up. Brady against McDermott, mentioned it earlier this week, as head coach of the Bills, Brady, 3 touchdowns, 4 picks. Brady against other Bills coaches, 66 touchdowns, 20 interceptions. So those numbers ridiculous, but not great against these Bills teams with Sean McDermott at the helm. Also, in five, this one was surprising. In 5 of the last 7 games in Buffalo, 1 score differential at the half. Because I remember even that Monday night game last year was a bit of a tractor pull until you had the pick six from Devin McCourty. And not to mention, like, there's a lot of manufactured hype surrounding this game. It's 3-0 against 3-0, and these liquor-fueled sex freaks in the Bills Mafia are certainly going to be loud and wild and treating this thing like the AFC Championship game. But there's not going to be an upset. I think you get a game, but there's not going to be an upset. I think the offense will struggle. I would certainly hammer the under, but an upset, it's not happening because of one reason and one reason only, and that's Bills quarterback Josh Allen. Never mind just my own eyeball test that this hero ball artist, like, I think just sucks. I think he sucks. He's made a few big plays here and there, but I think more often than not, he's trying to make something out of nothing. But I saw a stat yesterday from our friend Boston Sports Inf on Twitter. Not enough room for the O. Boston Sports Inf. That cemented it for me as to why the Bills lose this game. And it's because of this stiff quarterback. As the starter, Josh Allen, against teams that didn't make the playoffs, 8-3, 11 touchdowns, 11 picks, over 2,000 yards, QB rating of 75.7. Not bad. That's not bad.
It's bad.
You want his numbers against teams that made the playoffs?
Something tells me it's worse.
0-3, 48 of 91, 546 yards. Again, that's a quarterback in 3 games, 546 yards combined. 2 touchdowns, 4 picks, good for a QB rating of 60.5. Those numbers, combined with the fact this is easily the biggest game of this kid's career, going against this Patriots defense that I do think is legit, especially in the secondary. I saw this yesterday. That's when I threw my hands in the air and just said, all right, we're good here. This is nothing but hype. Pats are going to go into Buffalo. They're coming out 4-0. I do think it'll be a game, especially in the first half. And the offense will struggle, especially with Pouty Brady, the way he's talked this week and about these wide receivers he apparently just doesn't like. And I think there's concerns about the offensive line. But it's going to be Josh Allen who cost the Bills the game. That's a lock.
Maz?
So I was going to open Red Sox, but in the wake of the Kyrie Irving comments down in Brooklyn, I wanted to touch on what Irving said today as a member of the Nets. I know we have audio of it that we'll play later. I'm not sure it's been fully edited down yet, so I'm going to read this part of what Kyrie Irving said. 9 months ago, I was sitting in front of the Boston crowd saying I wanted to re-sign. After that, A lot of things happened in my personal life that really changed the landscape of how I felt about the game of basketball and actually playing it in a team environment. And that really affected me as a human being. I didn't share it with anyone. I didn't want to come out and say that this is bothering me or that I'm in a depression at this point of dealing with the death of my grandfather. And then he goes on to talk about some other things. Can I just say, and I'm not going to rant and rave and kick and scream about it. I can't tell you how weak I think this is on the part of Kyrie Irving. I cannot possibly emphasize enough how weak I think this is on the part of Kyrie now, after everything that went down, the way he behaved, the stories that came out that he and Kevin Durant had basically conspired to play this season together long before he ever showed up in Boston last year. Now you're going to hide behind the death of your grandfather? Has it affected you emotionally? I wasn't thinking straight. I mean, that's effectively what he's saying here. I think that of all the lame things I've ever heard from players over the years to explain why they did or did not do something, this is up near the top of the list. I don't know what's number one. I can't recall them all off the top of my head at right this instant. But to sit there and say that all of this was triggered by an event in your personal life, there are people who have encountered far worse and withstood it and done their jobs. And honored the commitment that they made to their organization and their teammates. This is cowardly to say it the way he said it today. I don't think there's any other word for it.
Okay, we'll definitely get into Kyrie Irving's comments today as he finally meets, for the first time since last year blew up, he met the media. It was the Nets media. And so, as usual, it was diarrhea of the mouth. So there's a lot to unpack there from Kyrie. I'll just give you a few quick thoughts on last night. On the Packers, first of all, I think Aaron Rodgers choked that ball game. I don't know how many snaps they had inside the 10, but it was
six.
There's my number. Six snaps inside the 10-yard line. And I don't care what the play calling is. If you can't punch it in with six attempts inside of the 10-yard line with the game on the line, that is an epic gag. So I think Aaron Rodgers gagged that ball game away. I also think the ball game came down to coaching. I think that the Eagles offense picked apart the Packers and sort of put the fraud to the Packers D so far this year. I think they exposed the Packers D as a fraud defense, and especially the coaching, because the running lanes were there. When the guys were open, they were open. The Packers, they scored their points and gained their yards on freelance plays by Aaron Rodgers for the most part. Him running around, him scrambling for yards, flags for pass interference. I felt there, as usual, there were very few schemed plays where guys were open and the plays were just executed. It was mostly scramble drill plays by Aaron Rodgers. And that's how the Packers got the bulk of their yards. I thought the Eagles got their yards in a far more schemed way. And I think the coaching also came down to those goal line plays, with the plays that were called on the goal line by the Packers. So I think the Eagles exposed the Packers' D. I think Rodgers choked the game, and I think the coaching really came through in that ball game. Thirdly, and I'll just open it to you, how are you enjoying pass interference and replay? How are you enjoying it so far? And it really hasn't hit home here because those aren't your teams last night, but the national narrative is starting to latch into it. If you are a Green Bay or an Eagles fan, you're coming out of the next game or waking up the next day saying, what are we really doing with this stuff? And trust me, it's coming for you. It's coming for you. There's no impact on replay and pass interference when you're winning 43-0. So you just haven't had the instance yet to, again, have...
to lose your mind.
To have Hurley or Barstool Sports, you know, start picketing the league office. But it's coming. You're going to have a day where there's going to be a close game and a play is going to go one way or the other because of a call or a non-call, and you're going to lose your mind. And I actually think the league's done a good job with it. I think they've been, in the games I've seen, very consistent. Not perfect, but very consistent. I'm glad the way they called them last night. But I can already sense fans can't handle it. I already told you from day one this was going to be the tipping point. The fans were going to lose their minds, and the league would have to react to it. And I can already sense the fans not being able to deal with how it's being called. I can handle it. Even as a Packers fan, I don't think they were the better team last night. The Packers didn't deserve to win that ball game. I have no problem with them not reversing the Scantling pass interference. None. The Packers didn't deserve the game. I can handle it. Can the fans? Can the baby fans in Green Bay handle it? I don't know. I don't know. What's Michael Hurley of Wisconsin doing today? I bet he's losing his mind.
Oh, yeah. No, he's blogging for his website.
He's talking about the league wanted Philadelphia to win because Philly was 1-2 and the league needs Philadelphia. And so, you know, I'm sure the baby fanboy bloggers in Green Bay are crying about the league engineering that game. But I think you did see it last night that these games are in the hands of the league more than they've ever been. You can take away a touchdown here from Philadelphia, give it back to them, and Philadelphia take one from Green Bay. You can, because all those plays, if you went either way, you could be justified in calling them any way you want. And they really are in the hands in the league. So can the fans handle it? That's my question.
I generally like the fact that unless it is so blatant that, you know, 95% of people agree that they're not reversing it. That part I agree with, not to jump in on your take.
No, but I think they've been pretty good about it.
And I, by the way, I said they had 6 plays inside the 10. They had 8. There were 6 on that one possession. That one where they get stopped on 4 downs, they had 6 plays inside the 10.
Okay,
and
so
for the next one, they had 2 others.
So for the night, I think they were 1-for-7 in the red zone or something like this. How many snaps did they have inside? You know, it's not like they were snapping from the 19. They were, a lot of these plays, they were inside the 10, inside the 5. 4 cracks from the 1.
Those 4 straight plays at that crack that they had with about 6 and change left were 4 of the worst plays I think I've ever seen in my life.
Well, 2 had 0 chance. I mean, so, you know, you line up 4 times and 2 have absolutely no chance, none. Now, you could say, I mean, Jimmy Graham, you're half a foot taller than that defensive back you went up against. Can you go up and high point the ball and catch that ball? Or maybe on the 4th down, try it with 2 hands instead of 1? Jackass. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that might be asking too much at that point, but it didn't come down to replay, but it still has fans shaking their head like, what? You know, what exactly is this? All right, so those are opening takes. We hogged the whole first segment. I promise the whole second segment is yours right after these words.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bored my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
And the Packers second down, goal to go. The football just outside the 2-yard line of Philadelphia. Out of the shotgun, Jones on the left side of Rodgers. Snap to A-Rod. Throws the slant right side. It's deflected off the hands and intercepted. Down the left sidelines on the interception is Brigham. And Philadelphia has the football out across the 20-yard line. Went off the hands of the intended receiver, Nigel Bradham, on the interception. 22-yard return. First interception of the season for Aaron Rodgers.
Looked like a contested catch regardless, Wayne.
Yep. Wow.
Sad little cheeseheads. Poor guys. ESPN had these stats this morning. Most incompletions from the 1-yard line by a quarterback in any quarter over the last 40 years. 4. Okay. So what happened last night has not happened in 40 years in the league. Those 4 incompletions from the 1 in 1 quarter. For Rodgers, it was his first career interception. This is actually kind of impressive. First ever interception from inside the 3-yard line or closer. He had never done that before. And it's the latest career interception he had ever thrown in a game with 28 seconds left. But no, that's great. Let's call the Malcolm Butler play. Oh, that was a good play calling. There's a lot of good history with that play.
I mean, it did. It felt a lot like that play, didn't it, when you watch it?
I think it was that play. I think it was. And they jumped it. Because, you know, who could have seen that coming? So, anyway.
Just quick, as a Packers fan, Mike, part of me, in watching this last night, did you feel like they're trying to make a conscious effort to get away from Mike McCarthy and his style of offense so much that they, like, refuse to hand off the ball at all? That blew my mind.
I felt it was back to the future, which is Rodgers running around making plays and no one else doing anything right.
But you're at the 1. Hand it off once. Just once. And I get it. The Philadelphia Eagles defense up front is really good, and you lost a couple offensive linemen last night. But just one. Just one. You might be able to break a couple of tackles and get in.
So I'm curious if they called it and he changed it.
I wonder that too, yeah.
Because LaFleur at one point in his post game said, when asked about that sequence, he said, good question.
Yeah.
So this is what we talked about yesterday. You know, Rodgers said during the week, we're not game managers here. We expect more. So now he gets on the 1 yard line with the game on the line. Does he call his number four straight times? I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, I wondered the same thing.
This is exactly what we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, I wondered the same thing. Like, you know, it's hard to know, right? Because Rodgers will do it. Hell, he did it to McCarthy.
Okay, so your calls, as promised. Jackie and Weymouth, lead us off.
I wanted to talk about Antonio Brown exit and how it messes up Brady's exit strategy, because with what's going on in Cleveland, it's most likely that Josh McDaniels is going to end up in Cleveland now next year after the Freddie Kitchen experiment, and Nick Caserio is going to be down in Houston. So there literally is a complete changing of the guard in Foxborough. So, you know, Brady has no interest in staying without McDaniels.
Do you believe that?
I think that the pouting of Antonio Brown leaving is based on Brady's exit strategy. Okay. He wanted to go out on a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl win and say, thank you very much, but Giselle is saying, I must be home with my family now. And it just messes up the entire exit strategy.
Okay, Jackie, I like all the conspiracy theories. We'll take them. I think it's independent of any of that. I think he wanted to work with Antonio Brown and he was taken away from him. Period, story over, and he's pouting. That's it. Do you think if Josh McDaniels leaves, Brady's going to leave because of Josh? And he's staying because of Josh?
No.
Would you stop with this?
No.
No.
So, again, now, if you wanted to tell me that, you know, Brady this year means a lot to him and that, you know, that Brown in some way was connected to that I would buy. You follow me on
that? Yeah, no, it's just another temporary thing that didn't go his way earlier in the year, and he's sort of pouting about it. But I fully expect him to get over it, as he usually does. Jim in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, guys, you've been talking about it, but, you know, your take yesterday is that Aaron Rodgers would refuse to be a game manager, would refuse not to take center and everything, and that Tom Brady could set the fact of being a game manager.
That's right.
Last year in the Super Bowl, he throws a great pass to Gronk, puts him on the 3 yard line, he agrees to hand off, Moschel runs them in, and that was pretty much true of the whole playoffs. Brady gets them in there, he hands off. Last night, Aaron Rodgers refused to hand off the football, had to be the center of attention, and guess what? They can't get in six plays. He throws a pick. Now, I know all the history is that he doesn't do that, but your take yesterday, you deserve the Marconi.
Thank you.
For the take you had yesterday.
Thank you. Marconi winning take. Agreed. Would he be egoless enough to manage the game? He told you he wouldn't. He told you. It's why we ran that cut yesterday. And we don't know if they called the passes or the runs from the sidelines. I'm just sort of surmising by that one line by the coach who said, good question, was that when he was asked about it. So it wouldn't surprise me if Rodgers checked into those pass plays. Wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Of course, how could it? Really, how could it? And again, I don't know. To me, there's some sort of poetic justice to the way that whole thing went down. What did he throw? 50-plus passes? 53, 50, whatever the final number was?
52.
Okay, so 52 attempts. He passed for 440-something yards, and they lost the game.
That doesn't bother me. Those attempts don't bother me as much. They weren't running for squat. They couldn't. You know me in the running game. Especially if it's not working. The Eagles could run, so run, fine. Like, the Eagles, I get it. They were gashing them. Hand the ball off. The Packers were doing squat on the ground.
I'm just talking about the whole thing, that Rodgers was a bigger part of it last night and they lost.
Oh,
their defense let them down. And to me, this is the lesson always. If it's about one guy too much in that sport, it's not going to work.
So, up and down the field, I was okay on the 1 yard line. I mean, on the 1 yard line, you got to be kidding me. And all those cracks they had inside the 10, all those cracks they had inside the 5, that, you know, that's what I question with the play calling. Darnell in the car, your thoughts on Kyrie Irving today?
Hey, guys, what's going on? So, yeah, on Kyrie's press conference, it was just classic Kyrie. You know, he tries to, you know, say a lot of nice things and have you feeling bad for him. And then at the end, he still just blamed the young guys in the nicest way possible.
He said,
you know, we had a lot of youth, a lot of expectations and personal goals, you know, that are really only earned by certain players in this league. And then he ends it by saying, oh, including myself. Like, Kyrie, we know you don't mean that. We know you just want to blame the young guys. It was just classic Kyrie.
Okay, so I'm still, you know, again, he just gives you so much because he just rambles on and on. But there was a point in there where he said that about the
Eagles. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everyone has a role to play, he says. And you see the most experienced teams end up winning the championships because they all buy in and they sacrifice. It's usually the oldest teams in the league that make it there every single year because they don't have to deal with the same youthful expectations that are unrealistic for players that really have to earn different things in this league to be at that level, including myself. he says.
He just tacked that on.
That's what I feel.
But is he wrong?
No, no, no. He's right. But the point is, it's not the way you lead. It's not the way you lead.
Yeah.
So you can have young guys on a team and win. They're not necessarily the centerpiece guys, but you can still have them on the team. Rondo was a kid when they won. He was a starter. So they had to beat it into his head, but they had good leadership on that team. They had Garnett. They had, you know, Pierce and Allen, who had bought in. And so, but more importantly, we're able to include the young guys. Kyrie alienated them. Like that, to me, that's the part that he doesn't take accountability for. He alienated them. He made it worse.
We'll play the sound coming up. He was at his insufferable best today. Mark in Charleston. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. Do you guys think it would be smarter to take back James Devlin and Isaiah Wynn off IR over N'Keal Harry?
So I want to see Harry back. I do. So I'm taking Wynn and N'Keal Harry, two of the three.
Okay.
So I can't remember exactly what you said, but to me that, you know, I just have a hard time with the indispensable fullback. Like, you can't duplicate a 255-pound battering ram. You know, it's not like a specific sort of special skill set.
Sure.
It's just a physical, you know, fullback. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's like you should be able to find that guy. And whether it's this dude from, where's he from? Dutch?
Germany.
Jakob.
Or whatever. Or somewhere else. Like, you drafted that N'Keal Harry in the first round. He's got special skills and special abilities that you can't find anywhere. So, no, I'm bringing him back over the fullback.
So you want to tell me that you want to go that route? All I will tell you is that I'm worried about the blocking. I'm worried about whether it's left tackle, center, fullback, tight end, whatever it is. They've taken a hit at all four of those spots, and I'm worried about the blocking.
Oh, Derek in Foxborough with the Red Sox take. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I've been listening to Maz on the baseball reporters talk about how they need to trade Mookie Betts. And I just think that would set a horrible precedent. Like, what, now they're the Florida Marlins that have to sell off players because they don't want to pay them? Look what the Marlins did. They traded Yelich and Stanton, and you couldn't name one player they got in return for them. So they have to, you know, they're the Red Sox. They have more than enough money to pay Mookie Betts, you know, offer him Mike Trout's contract.
What if he doesn't want to be here, Derek?
Well, you make him an offer, you can't refuse. You know, David,
what if he refuses it?
Want to be here.
What if he refuses it?
Well, then you play out the year and you let him walk, but you can't, you never win these trades. When you sell off that, you know, look what the Expos, when they traded Pedro Martinez.
Okay, so just let me stop you. Is he right that you never win these trades when you
do
what they're doing?
No, he's not right. Sometimes you do win them. I mean, sometimes you get a bunch of prospects that can rebuild your organization. What was that Bartolo Colon?
I was going to say, is there a good example?
Yeah, that Bartolo Colon deal that Cleveland made. They got a bunch of guys.
Was that
for
like
him.
Brandon Phillips?
Grady Sizemore, Travis Lee. Was Cliff Lee in that deal?
Yes.
Cliff Lee was in that. Brandon Phillips, you said Phillips.
Yeah, Phillips, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they got like three, four all-star caliber players. That deal totally changed that organization. So, look, to me, you asked the pertinent question. It's not about, us saying don't pay him, they can't afford it. He doesn't want to be here. If he doesn't want to be here, there's nothing you can do. Then the only question you have to ask is, can I win a world title if I keep him, and is that worth it? And I would say yes, but I'm not sure that they are going to be gunning for a world title next year, in which case I look at it and say move on.
Agenda Free Friday, we allow everything, but some topics have to be quick, like this one. KJ in Fall River, you have less than 30 seconds. Go.
So the Reds started 2-8 this year, got rid of their manager, brought in Bruce Arenas. Since then, they've won every game but two, or drawn. I'm just wondering, they're about to make the playoffs. Do you think they can compete for the championship this year?
I don't know MLS well enough. I wish they were good and the league was pertinent enough for me to talk about it, because I would embrace soccer if it were there, but it's not there.
They are a good story, though, the Rebs are.
I think they are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure they've locked it up, right, in terms of getting in?
I don't think so.
But the fact that they were where they were and they changed coaches and they've made a big acquisition, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea with Arena, like that it could change that dramatically, it's a good story.
I'm telling you, their relevance is up to the Crafts. If they want to invest in it, I think this would be a good market for it. I do. I think people are waiting for it. And not everybody and not mass quantities of people, but enough people to make it viable. But the thing's been so wretchedly managed for so long that, who could invest in it? But if they invest in it, fans will invest in it. Joe in Dorchester, less than 30 seconds, quickly.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, so I just wanted to get Maz's thoughts on the celebrity boxing match coming up against Screech versus his twin brother, the Bagel Boss guy. You know, a couple of hobbits going at it, and if he has a personal interest in it at all.
So who's fighting? Screech?
Yeah, Dustin Diamond is fighting the bagel guy.
Who that video?
Yeah, the little guy who
people think I look like.
Yes, so it's a celebrity boxing match that's coming up in New Jersey.
So I'm betting against the guy that looks like me. I think he's going to get his ass kicked.
Yeah, Screech is replacing Lenny Dykstra, by the way.
Wow, this sounds like a humdinger, this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, talk about humiliating, getting your ass kicked by Screech.
All right, we continue with your thoughts and more from Kyrie Irving as well after the update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
So when I go outside and I see all these kids leaving a bunch of courts, I'm like, I just came here to shoot with my dad. Because that's where I grew up, is outside playing basketball, having that attitude to really prove people right, that I'm the next one and meant to take over this league for the next few years.
Did you get that last part? You get that one? To prove people right?
That I'm the next one and meant to take over this league for the next few years.
Oh, God. This is insufferable tool bag.
He is. He's insufferable.
And he was with you, and now you are freed from having to pretzel twist yourself into defending him. Now you are freed to do what is easier to do with these guys, which is root against them than root for them. He is mini LeBron. It's all LeBron's crap. It's the same thing. So, Jimmy, you have a thought before I...
I find it was a quick reminder how detestable and annoying I find him. And I know we were going to talk about it today, and we will continue at times during the season. But on a day-to-day basis, I can't tell you how happy I am that this guy's out of my life. I find him just so insufferable. And the thing with mentioning his grandfather's passing and how he went in the tank, you're going to say that about the same team that employed Isaiah Thomas, and I know I've had my thing with Isaiah Thomas. I thought he was overrated and whatnot, but one thing I would never question about that guy is his toughness.
His heart.
And he played through literal tears the day after his sister died, and he didn't put it in the tank. He ultimately succumbed to his injuries, but he didn't quit. He didn't become, you know, someone toxic in the locker room who ultimately became a problem for the team like this guy did because your grandfather died. I don't know. Like, we all have to deal with something like that at some point in our life. We get a week off. It sucks. You continue to deal with the pain, but you ultimately go back to work and you be a professional.
Well, and
you couldn't even do that?
To use it as such a shield because...
It's gutless.
Well, because you can't really criticize him for being hurt by the loss of a family
right.
member.
Correct.
Because that makes you the a-hole.
Right.
He's hiding behind it.
So it's the ultimate sort of defense because...
It's cowardly.
How could you challenge him on something so personal and meaningful to him? And so that's the perfect thing to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I believe me, that crossed my mind, and you know what? Too bad. I don't care. No, I'm not trying to be a dick about it.
No, I hear you.
The fact is the fact that it is, you know,
it's Weasley is what
it is. It's cowardly. I mean, the word I use is cowardly. I think he's acting like a child. Like, oh, I'll get away with it if I say this. You don't get away with it. You acted like a complete jerk while you were here.
So let's just hear a little chunk.
He was never committed here. Why can't people understand that? He was never committed here. He was lying opening night. Lying, I tell you.
So he addresses it here. This is just one answer. Is this one answer, Jimmy, that goes
4 minutes, 19 seconds.
Just an absolute diarrhea of the mouth. Do you have the question in here? Is it what happened in Boston? It's pretty much the question, right?
Well, I can back it up and we can play.
No, go ahead.
Question.
What happened in Boston?
For the few time. Well, I think around that time, it felt incredible in terms of the energy that we were building, especially for the future in Boston. It was something that I couldn't really explain at the time because, you know, personally, I don't think I was acknowledging the things that were surrounding my life as well, and how to lead this group of guys that I've been traded to, that I have, well, I wasn't drafted by Boston. I had no type of affiliation with Boston before I left Cleveland. There weren't any works, anything that happened. Boston was a surprise team with Danny that took the chance on trading for me.
No, Boston was not a surprise team. You wanted to come to Boston. It was Boston or San Antonio.
And when they did, and the way our first season happened, and then also the way the end of the season happened, and having so much youth and so much exuberance and goals set personally, I think that some of the actual knowledge that needed to be had in terms of being a championship team takes more than just 2 years.
Yeah, the end of the season where you were in Miami getting a nose job and the young kids were playing in the playoffs and playing well and you couldn't handle it.
It takes more than just the environment that you feel just comfortable in. Hey, you know, I think I want to resign here if you guys have me.
No, you never wanted to resign here. It was a lie.
Boston crowd was immense. It was crazy. They loved me in Boston. I love the Boston fans.
Stop.
That's a crock.
That was a whopper, too.
Totally.
They loved me. I love the Boston fans. I mean,
well, at the very beginning, I think they did.
Well, the Boston fans, look, the Boston, the Green Teamers, like, that's an easy group. So, yeah, you had them. I mean, Attila the Hun would have the Green Teamers if they were, if he was wearing green.
I was just going to say, put on
green.
Yeah.
Mussolini would be a great Celtic. You know, you'd all root for all of them as long as they're wearing green. You people are easy. So, yeah, you did embrace him. But him, you know, him just uttering those words, they loved me. Oh, Sally Fields here. Anyway, go ahead.
Immense. It was crazy. They loved me in Boston. I love the Boston fans. And then 2 weeks later, things just got really, really rocky for me in terms of when I left for, I believe you know, after the Phoenix game, I went to my grandfather's memorial. And he passed on October 23rd. And after he passed, basketball was the last thing on my mind. So a lot of basketball and the joy I had from it was sucked away from me, and there was a facial expression that I carried around with me throughout the year.
Stop.
Didn't allow anyone to get close to me. And
stop. That's true. How many times we said, look at that look on your puss.
It's called resting bitch face.
What is that? What is wrong? Why? Look at that look on your face. Oh, yeah. That was obvious. Well, he's claiming it was his grandfather. Go ahead.
There was a facial expression that I carried around with me throughout the year. Didn't allow anyone to get close to me in that instance, and it really bothered me. And I didn't take, the necessary steps to get counseling or get therapy or anything to deal with someone that close to me dying. I've never dealt with anything like that. So for me, I responded in ways that are uncharacteristic. And like I said, I had to acknowledge that fact. And I had to acknowledge that fact to the organization first, because that was our internal bond and trust that we had. I talked to Danny. I wanted to resign. So throughout the year, it started becoming more and more clear that my relationships within my home life have way higher precedent than the organization
here?
Or anyone.
Yeah. Can we Jimmy, can we stop there? Like, that's another one, too. So the death of my grandfather caused me to reevaluate my priorities, and I wanted to be closer to home. So that's what triggered the whole thing? What about all the stories about the conversations between you and Durant? Is there any truth to any of those? Because all that took place before your grandfather. Based on the timeline, you had already been talking to Durant about setting up the whole thing, probably in New York. So is that really what it was, or are you just feeding us a bunch of garbage like you did the whole time you were here?
Right, and if you were so miserable from October 22nd on, why were you so happy in Orlando during the All-Star break?
By the way, he seemed to get over the sorrow in Charlotte. That's true.
I mean, I'm just looking at this quickly. It was October 22nd. It wasn't Phoenix. It was Orlando. They were 2-2, and then they won the next four. So they were 6-2. So when exactly did this grief and depression set in?
I don't know.
Like, did it take a couple of weeks?
I don't know.
Anyway, go ahead, Jimmy.
Go ahead, sorry.
Within my home life have way higher precedent than the organization or anyone, and I barely got a chance to talk to my grandfather before he passed from playing basketball. So you tell me if you would want to go to work every single day knowing that you just lost somebody close to you, doing a job every single day that everyone from the outside or anyone internally is protecting you for.
Okay, so just stop. Yes, that's sort of the deal. You can't, because you have a death of a loved one, as awful as it is, you got to still go to work. You do eventually. You got to come back and go to work. You do. You would expect me to, yes, actually, yes. That is the expectation.
This guy lies to himself like nobody I've ever seen. I mean, that's what he's doing. He's lying to himself. I think he actually believes this crap. This is how he justifies it. Further evidence of how narcissistic he is. Anyway.
I mean, if it was all about his grandfather, why is he bringing this stuff about the kids and what they accomplished the year before and the experience that it takes? So which is it? Was it the kids and that they didn't get it because of what had happened to them the year before? Or is it your grandfather? Because you're bringing in that whole other thing, too. So what? Yeah, he's just using it as a crush.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's he's out of his mind. Okay. Yeah, like a split personality. So, he's not right.
So we'll continue to play a sound of it as we go forward. We got all day to do it. Kyrie finally opened
Lies.
His yapper down in Brooklyn, and it's what you would expect. Another, you know, handful of nonsense. Right back to you after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
There are personal goals that everyone has, family, friends, media, telling everyone, hey, you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that. In actuality, none of that crap matters. So everyone has a role to play, and you see the most experienced teams end up winning the championship because they all buy in and sacrifice. It's usually the oldest teams in the league that make it there every single year because they don't have to deal with the same youthful expectations that are unrealistic for players that really have to earn different things in this league to be at that level. So, including myself.
You go throwing the young kids under the bus again.
Still doing it.
Still doing it. What? Tell me, is Brooklyn some sort of veteran-laden team?
Nope.
He's walking into it. So how's he going to respond there?
No idea. Well, he's got Durant with him now. I mean, at least in body, if not on the court.
So I would say, don't let this guy be better than you.
Next year, he has Durant. And this year, Kyrie Irving will not tell you that Durant is coming back. In fact, he's going to protect Kevin Durant and his health at all costs this year. He said that today.
Okay, well, don't let that team be better than you. Don't let the Nets and Kyrie Irving alone beat you in the playoffs. Don't let that happen.
I mean, boy, does this guy have a warped view of the world and himself.
Wow.
The so, prophecy, according to Kyrie.
I'm taking over the league.
All right, get your thoughts on that and anything else because it is an agenda-free Friday. Here's Matt in Framingham. Go ahead, Matt.
So, Michael, I'm pretty much in agreement with everything you said yesterday about how the Patriots need to win on defense this year instead of offense because I'm totally in agreement with you that Brady can't carry the team like he used to. That being said, here's my counter-argument. Let's assume for a second that they're in the playoffs and they happen to be, oh, I don't know, Kansas City at Arrowhead with Patrick Mahomes in the offense. Do you honestly think they're going to win on defense in that place? I think not.
Well, winning on defense, maybe winning on defense is 31-28 as opposed to 41-38, which it was last year. If you're just a little bit better on defense – doesn't that allow you to be a little bit worse on offense? And can't you win that way?
Yeah, absolutely. You win 27-24. I'll take that.
And I never said Brady can't carry the team. He probably still could if they were kind of built that way. I don't think they're built that way. I think their defense has surpassed the offense. So win that way and fit into that structure. And I think he can.
Yeah, the ratio's different now. That's all. I mean, it's different. It used to be mostly offense, call it 70-30, call it whatever the hell you want. Now it's probably 45-55. You know, 45 offense, 55 defense.
Okay, Agenda Free Friday, everything on the board. Here's a pissed off Bruins fan, Max in Cohasset. Why are you pissed off?
So, it's not a preseason this year.
Max, you broke up. Say it again.
Preseason this year?
I think you asked me if I've watched any preseason this year. No, not a second.
Okay, so I was at the game on Monday, and I saw Pasternak and Marchand, the beautiful 2-on-1 goal. It's no joke.
Okay, so your phone is just not... you went to the game, you saw a beautiful goal with Marchand and Pasternak. Why would you be pissed off?
I think he said they gave one up.
Oh, gave one up. So
that's my guess, anyway.
All right, so I have no idea what you just said, but you know what pisses me off is Marchand and Pasternak. Marchand and Pastrnak piss me off. And I think those two guys, that line, it's hard to get as angry at Bergeron, but put him on the list. And that line cost you the championship. That line cost you the cup. And tangentially, the coach who rode them too hard or gave them too much ice when it was clear they were getting their ass kicked cost you the cup. So that's what I'm still pissed off about. We're going to keep them together and make it all about, we, the perfection line. How about we split them up? And if they don't, if they aren't accountable in their own end, or if they get into bad habits like they did in that finals, how about you split them up or sit them? If someone else is playing better, why don't we do that? As opposed to these, you know, the sacred cowism of, oh, we can't touch Patrice Bergeron, and the perfection line of Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak. How about we take a little tougher line on those guys? Why not? Especially in the playoffs. If they start getting their ass handed to them by Ryan O'Reilly or someone like that, how about you split them up or you sit them down and play someone else against them? That would be the thing I'm still pissed off about. Tony in the car, quickly follow it up.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Tony. Go.
Hi. Have you seen the Bruins schedule up to U.S. Thanksgiving yet?
I have not. Tell me about it.
Tampa twice, Toronto three times, Montreal twice, Colorado twice. It is not going to be easy. Bergeron's got the lingering groin thing.
Yeah.
Krejci's already hurt.
Yeah.
I am not optimistic.
Before Thanksgiving, they have Tampa twice, Toronto three times, and Montreal twice. Is that right?
Yep.
Holy crap. Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off. That's not good.
I mean, I got it right in front of me right now. Did he mention St. Louis and San Jose in there too, and Pittsburgh?
Okay. I don't know. It's just those division opponents.
I mean, I'm telling you right now.
If
anything other than a tough start happens for the Bruins, I'll be surprised.
Right. I'm sorry to jump on you there. I expect a Stanley. I mean, I still have a Stanley Cup hangover. Never mind them. I fully expect a Stanley Cup hangover, and if they got that facing them to start the year,
trouble.
Okay. Good to know. Adam in Roxbury, your thoughts on last night?
For years it seems like Thursday Night Football has been a subpar product, but last night's game was okay, and it was on a major network. And looking at the schedule going forward for the year, the Thursday night games seem like decent matchups. Do you think the NFL is actively trying to turn this into a better watching experience?
Yes. I think it started last year. I think the matchups improved last year.
Yeah, they
definitely
did it last
started
year.
Last year.
You know,
it's
more divisional matchups. And
well, it's not just that. They used to do divisional matchups in like Color Rush and sort of like throwaway games. But I think last year was the first year that Fox got it.
Correct.
So that was a quid pro quo. Fox bid all that money. They put it on Fox. They're going to put it on the network. And so they, you know, as part of that, they will beef up the matchups. And they have. They totally have beefed up the matchups. Last night was an entertaining ball game.
Absolutely it was. Yeah, I give Philly a lot of credit. Down 10-0. Could have been 14. They held them to a field goal there to get it to 10. Then they get the big kickoff return and came down and scored. Philly, that was a ballsy win for Philly last night.
Speaking of last night, Zach and Bridgewater, what stood out to you, Zach?
I want to talk about officiating last night. In my opinion, you could sum it up as the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good was Carson Wentz's fumble. They didn't blow it dead. They let it run out, and then they took it to the replay. That's how that should be played. The bad, there was a lot of missed holding calls, especially when Green Bay was passing the ball, but pretty egregious ones that were missed. But that's, you know, every game. And the ugly, somebody hosed last night on that interception to seal the game.
Okay, I don't think they got hosed.
And I'm glad they're not calling extra holding.
Well, I think Philly took the approach, we're going to hold every play, you can't call them all, which is smart. I mean, a lot of teams have done that. You've done that. So I think that's sort of what they were. There was a lot of contact on a lot of plays, and they called a lot, but they couldn't call them all. And so hats off to Philly for doing that. The Packers did not get hosed. They were not the better team. They did not deserve to win that ball game. Philly, I thought, was clearly the better team. And I thought the Packers were just in it because Rodgers started running around and they got some flags and he had some scramble plays, and otherwise their defense sucked. Their play calling created nothing.
They got run over.
It was all just one guy running around, and that's Rodgers. That's it. All they had.
What did they give up? 6 yards a rush?
It's ridiculous.
They got run over. When you get run over like that, you're gonna have a hard time.
But on the officiating, trust me, you don't feel it here because it's not your team. It's not your game. And when you're winning 43-0, you're not going to have one. You're not going to have one of those moments. But it's starting around the country and around the league to say, what is pass interference and what are we doing? Because there's clearly pass interference that they're not reversing. So why are we challenging that? Why do we have this in place if you're not going to reverse pass interference. We'll get to that off the top of the hour after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.